Connect. People. Potential. Technology.
With extensive experience as an HR leader in multinational companies, Tijani Jaziri combines his passion for innovation and operational excellence to transform and digitize HR departments. By harnessing the power of technology, he unlocks the full potential of HR, enabling businesses to navigate the evolving digital landscape and drive sustainable growth. Welcome to the Swiss Capricorn Podcast, Tijani. Happy to have you on board. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Jacob.
Tijani, I would like to start the podcast with a question. I always ask the first question, my podcast guest, how did you first enter the digital world in your life? Do you remember that?
So in my personal life, I would say I entered the digital world in the 90s, like everybody else, when internet started to emerge, let's say. And then from a professional perspective, I've always been surrounded by softwares, let's say. Especially in HR, you know, it's always about payroll, for example, which is the most common tool, let's say, everybody's using because it's a necessity. But then throughout the years, I would say, especially from 2015 and so on, there were more and more demand for more evolved solutions. When it comes to HR systems, it was not only about payroll anymore, but everything related to recruitment or performance management, talent management. And the more demand, was to have systems that could have all of this information into one place, because back then it was separated. Everything had a different solution, and it was kind of hard to have a system where we could combine all the information and have simple to use data, combining everything together, or dashboards to take decisions. And this is when also several software companies started to emerge as they started to address that problem. And this is where I really started to be involved into the world of digital HR solutions.
Interesting. So do you see the future like that, that in the software of HR systems, we will increasingly have more integration, like integrational systems where payrolling is integrated, recruitment, and you know, all the other aspects of HR?
Yeah, to me, that's the bread and butter of future HR systems, actually. And I work with several suppliers, and all of them are working into the same direction, which is combining all the HR information into one system, because it's easier for the HR people to have all the data in one place, to be able to compare payroll data with performance data, with talent data. It helps to gain more time, to have more clarity, to have a single source of data, which is not the case in many companies. And to me, that's the future. And further than that, I would say that also in the future, companies will look into systems that synchronize data from HR, but also from other departments into one data platform.
So from other departments, like, for example,
finance,
finance and
procurement,
procurement, and then integrate all of them. What other challenges do you see? I mean, you as a HR leader, you work for multinational companies. When it comes to the digitization of HR processes, what are the future challenges for these big multinational companies?
The challenge, I mean, comes from the fact that you have different people coming from different backgrounds. So you have HR people on the one side, you have IT people on the other side, and sometimes they have a hard time to connect, let's say. So HR comes with a simple request, but when it comes to digital solution, nothing is really simple. And they have a hard time to translate it into clear requirements, let's say, for IT. And then IT needs also to work in parallel to match this data with other systems or the ecosystem in general of the company. And this, I think, is one of the big roadblocks, let's say, in the development of digital HR solutions.
Mm-hmm. And where do you help companies, like in terms of your service now, your offering? Can you tell us a little bit about your offering and also where what problems you solve in the market?
Okay, so it's more or less what I just described. Mm-hmm. So basically, HR people know they need something, but they hardly know what they need exactly. Mm-hmm. So I help them navigate through their needs. I also help them understand what they already have, because sometimes they have a number of systems, but they either underuse them or don't even know what kind of capacities they could get from it, or they simply have nothing. And this is where I come and try to make an assessment of all the things they have compared with all the needs they have, and look into that together with them in order to understand how we could progress from there, based, of course, on their budgets and so on and their needs. And then I give them a perspective of putting everything together. I try to help them to build a strategy. So this is what I'm doing. I help them build a strategy around HR systems, because most of the time, what you find in organizations, even big corporate organizations, is that each HR in each country does their own thing, whether it's payroll, talent, or whatever. And from the corporate side of things, they don't have a unique solution to gather all the information. So it's always spreadsheets, emails, and things like that that are not really, let's say, user friendly. And I help them to build a strategy around that, to understand what they have and move into one direction, because HR, opposite to IT, doesn't have a systems, a strategy. And this is where I'm trying to bring them to build a strategy and move into that direction.
So you go into the company, make an assessment, talk to the HR leaders, and then analyze the needs they have and what they want, and then formulate a strategy that they can execute, and also which systems they could apply, which HR systems, in order to be more efficient.
Correct, yeah. Exactly. So which HR systems? So usually they have a number of systems, and sometimes they have systems which could do the job, but as they underestimated or underinvested into these systems, they are paying for something and using only 10% capacity of that thing. And this is exactly what I'm trying to improve. Mm-hmm. So make a better use of what they have, and also try to reduce the number of systems, because the more systems that you have, the more integrations you need to build. And by reducing the number of systems, you reduce the cost. Also improve the service level agreements, and have all the data into one place, which is easier also to produce reports and dashboards.
And also reducing the overlapping of work, mm-hmm. the redundancies.
The redundancy, yeah. The manual mm-hmm. workload, manual work. Try to automate mm-hmm. as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Integration is key to reduce manual errors as well. So the less systems you have, the better it is in usually. It's not necessarily more expensive. Sometimes it's even cheaper. Sometimes, most of the time, is even in terms of cost. Mm-hmm. But it is much more efficient from the HR perspective, because they have mm-hmm. less work to do on the day-to-day basis and better quality mm-hmm. of reports and data.
Does each and every company have like different needs? So that means they need a different system, or are there also standardized systems that work for a typical company?
Well, it depends. Mm-hmm. If you go for big companies, usually they go for the big players. Mm-hmm. But for small companies, and this is the market I'm targeting, you know, companies from, let's say, 1,000 to 5,000 employees, you have dozens of solutions that are on the market but unknown to the HR people, mm-hmm. because they are small solutions. They do the work pretty good, but they are simply unknown. And, mm-hmm. and most of the time, people think about the big names just because they don't know what else they could mm-hmm. have.
Yeah, and the big names is not always the fitting solution.
Well, it is a fitting solution for the big companies, but not for the small ones, because we're talking millions in terms of investments, and usually that is a big roadblock.
So you focus on SMEs, so companies, a range of like 1,000 plus employees?
1 to 5,000, I would say. Yeah, because above that, I think they can go to the, the big names and the big consulting firms to do the job. Which I've been working with for a number of years in the end, but my target is small companies.
Do you have a regional focus, geographical focus?
Well, more European focused, yes, European obviously focused. Because of the time zone, but yeah, anywhere in Europe it's, is good enough.
Tijani, I also have a question concerning the recruitment of new employees. What was your experience in the past? What were the challenges when companies recruited new employees? What did you experience, or what is your perspective?
What I've noticed over the past 5 to 10 years, I would say more into the last 5 years, especially after COVID, that people are more and more, I mean, employees or potential employees are more and more demanding. Especially the younger generation, they always are looking after a purpose. They just they don't want just to have a job and do whatever you tell them to do. They want to bring value, and they want to understand also where this is bringing not only the company but also them. The other thing I noticed that they have a huge demand of recognition, you know. They want to be promoted pretty quickly. They want to learn a lot, a number of things as well. So it's not only about doing the job. They want to understand the purpose. They want to learn new things. They want to create new things. But they also want to grow very fast. And that is very different from what I've seen in the past, that they want to become managers and directors in a couple of years. And this is where sometimes the corporate world has a, let's say, a gap between what people expect and what reality can propose.
So the infamous Gen Z generation is highly demanding and has a high sense of purpose and the willingness to be recognized in the marketplace. How can companies stay attractive for talent or to candidates nowadays, because it's such a fast-changing market as well? So what is your perspective there?
Well, as I said, attracting talent today means offering purpose, flexibility, and development. Retention is about trust sometimes. Career visibility and continuous learning. Companies that invest in people analytics and employee journey can adapt faster and create environments where people want to stay and grow. But in the end, I think the organizations need to adapt and not the other way around, because we are facing a generational gap, I think, more and more. And this new generation is not willing to work in the old-fashioned way.
So what does it mean? What kind of consequences does that have for the future?
It means people are going to be more and more volatile, I would say, especially this new generation. All the ones I've seen never stayed very long, except for the ones who got promoted, who got developed into the company, or who managed to create a sense of belonging to the company. But that doesn't happen over 6 months or of 9 months. It happens over time. So I think the critical gap is around 2 years. If you manage to get to retain that these people for 2 years, you succeeded to keep them for longer than that. But in any case, I don't think anyone should stay in a company more than 5 years.
Yeah, makes sense. How can candidates stay, remain attractive in the job market? What do they need to do?
Oh, they need to be aware of the new technology that is coming up. They need to be curious also, and figure out what is happening on the market. And they need also to be up to date on these new systems or new techniques that are coming up. And then the candidates who demonstrate the growth mindset and understand how to use tool, especially I think, will stand out.
So applying this new technology, be willing to learn also new systems, be adapt with the latest trends. So that's important.
Yeah, definitely.
Now AI is changing the world. Which jobs will disappear? What kind of jobs will stay? And which jobs will be newly created?
Well, I think we are still at the very early stage of AI, but from where we are today, I think repetitive rule-based jobs will decline, while roles requiring judgment, creativity, and human connection will grow. We'll see new jobs also, like AI specialists or ethicists, because ethic in AI is also a big topic, especially in Europe, probably less in Asia and North America. But that's a cultural thing again. You will have also prompt engineers who will appear, because there is an art in prompting also, in order to ask AI the right way to get the right output. I mean, if you prompt the same question in five different fashions, you will have five different flavors, obviously. And this is not really, it's somewhere between the science and the art, you know. And then digital workplace architects. The future isn't jobless, as people always fear. It's about shifting the skill set. And then as an HR, I think HR will have a major role to play in managing this transition.
So shifting the skill set, and then a bigger significance for HR.
Yes, definitely, because these are new skills. That's the also the other challenge about it, that it's brand new, so people are still discovering. Every month you have a new AI that pops up, and is moving so fast that it's very hard to cope with the pace of change.
Tijani, I also have a self-reflection question. So I would like to know, what is your superpower, the area you are better in than other people?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a superpower or if you could call it that like that, but what I'm trying to do is to translate complexity into clarity. Whether it's a business case or a transformation roadmap or a technology integration, I bring structure, insight, and actionable solutions. I make things happen as simply and as effectively as possible, and one of my mottos is always KISS. Keep it super simple, because it's complex enough, and if you make it more complex, people just won't understand it anymore, and
they get bored.
They don't get it. Yeah, they simply don't get it. So you need to make it simple. When things are complex, you have to translate it into an understandable and actionable way.
Yeah, I like that. Is there any personality, maybe a well-known or famous personality, that you particularly admire, or maybe several ones, and also why?
Well, admiration is probably not the right terminology in my case. I don't have specific people I admire. But the personality I would recommend with somebody that blends leadership, humility, and strategic foresight. So, for example, I was thinking about it on my way coming here. That was this businessman in the U.S. who had the Standard Oil Company. What was his name?
Rockefeller.
Exactly. He basically transformed the, I mean, he created an industry out of the blue. There was nothing when he created the oil company. And then he also pushed the car industry to move towards oil rather than electric, because in the beginning of the car industry, electric was also an option.
Oh, really?
A big option. Actually, cars started to be electric, and then he pushed to move them away from it.
Yes. Interesting. I didn't know that.
Same for trains and so on. So yes, there was a big fight back then in order to push the industry to move towards gas rather than electricity. And that was a very smart move from him. Not from the, let's say, ecological standpoint, I would say, but for his business, it was an excellent one.
So what do you exactly admire about him? Is it his vision, or is it his resilience, or what is it exactly that you admire?
Well, his resilience, because the business he created was not, didn't exist, number one, so it's a visionary thing. I don't know if he managed to foresee how large this could grow, but he was there. That was the point. And then, as I said, he pushed, he shifted, you know, the industry towards his business rather than the electricity one. So that's a smart one, let's say, to push industries, not only car industry, but also then there was all the transportation industry in the end, to make use of his products.
Yeah, he must have been a good lobbyist.
He was one, definitely.
Is there a sentence, a mission statement, a credo, a motto you live by in your life? Do you have anything like that?
I just told you about it. Keep it super simple. That's the real one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Final question, Tijani, how will AI improve your life in 2 years?
Well, AI will probably free up some time and cognitive space by automating low-value tasks, obviously. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, it will augment also decision-making, allowing me to deliver deeper insight, faster strategy, and more tailored solutions to my clients.
Tijani Chaziri, thank you so much for this conversation. I really enjoyed that. I wish you all the best for your business, success, and nothing less.
Thanks a lot, Jacob. It was a pleasure to meet you.
People, potential, technology.